The work reveals itself as you go. I just finished Rick Rubin's new book called The Creative Act. This is one of the quotes from it. It's a book on his process and his methods. If you don't know Rubin, he's one of the most prolific music producers on the planet, taking the good work and making it better for a talent like the Beastie Boys, AC/DC, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Johnny Cash, Tom Petty, Weezer, Linkin Park, Neil Diamond, Metallica, Shakira, almost the entire A-list music industry, including Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons. Dan reveals his music-making process as well as gets real vulnerable about why his music is so personal. You're going to love this one. This is a behind-the-brand snapshot, a moment in time from a full-length episode that I thought is worth your attention and focus. As always, my goal is to be your eyes and ears, to single out the nuggets that will help you build your brand on a personal or professional level. And before we get into it, I'm taking roll call. Are you here? If I've ever brought you any value at any time, I have one request. Please take 7 seconds and leave a review with a couple of comments and feedback. Reviews actually benefit you because the more we have, the more it signals the algorithm, and this helps us attract A-list guests that you want to learn from. Ready, set, go. Music is one of those mysteries and little miracles in life, isn't it? It has the power to stimulate our brains or put us in a certain mood. If you close your eyes, it can take you back to a moment in time or a memory. I could literally close my eyes right now and think about Depeche Mode's People Are People, and I can almost smell the air or feel the breeze of Newport Beach at 32nd Street trying to park my little VW bug somewhere near the sand with my friends. It's amazing. You're about to watch an incredible conversation between Dan Reynolds and I. I say conversation because this is more than an interview. It really is a very personal talk, and I'm so lucky to have had it. Dan shares some really incredible stuff about his music, relationships, some of the dark times he's been through and how he got out of it, as well as some other important issues. I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. In any case, this is a great reminder for all of us that whoever you are, wherever you are, we were born for greatness, that we all have gifts to share and art. Quoting from one of my favorites, we are the music makers. We are the dreamers of dreams. Here we go with Dan Reynolds.
Hello, I am Dan Reynolds. I sing for Imagine Dragons, and you're watching Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
I mean, your music seems extremely personal. Would you put a label on that and say that's inspiration?
You know, I don't really know what it is other than just truth. And for me, truth is not always been a part of my art. It's always been there, but I would bury it in metaphors because I was very fearful when I started art. I'd never wanted to write a song and have anybody know what I was actually talking about. Like when I was 12 years old, especially, I remember showing my music to the first time to my dad, I think was the first person I showed a song to. And I was starting to deal with depression for the first time. And I didn't want my dad to say, what's wrong with my son? Is my son going to hurt himself and depressed and need to see a therapist? Like, I didn't want to have that conversation, but I didn't want to write about anything else about other than being sad. I'm sure my dad probably did know. So a lot of the first songs that I ever wrote, whether it was Radioactive or a lot of people listening to songs, they think it's about a post-apocalyptic thing, or I've heard people say that it was like about Spider-Man, like all kinds of crazy things. But that song was me really depressed, writing about depression.
Yeah.
And welcoming to myself to a new age of enlightenment and happiness, which is always what I've tried to do since I was young, which is to kind of reach somewhere that I can't, which is out of a clouded mind of depression.
Yeah. So, how early on, what's the level of self-awareness that you had? How early were you kind of keyed in that you were depressed? Because, you know, speaking personally, I didn't really think depression was a thing until later on in my life when it really punched me right in the face. And I was like, oh, I think I'm depressed.
Right.
It's almost like that idea of my eyes are leaking. What's happening? And when you're crying for the first time, you know, you're just not self-aware. How early were you?
I didn't have a name for it in my teenage years, but I knew that I was different than the kids around me. I wasn't like, I was just different. And I didn't quite know what it was. When I got into high school, I certainly started to know that I was, okay, this is depression. It's not sad. Anybody who's been depressed knows that it's not. You know, there's a big difference between, hey, I'm sad, my girlfriend broke up with me, I'm heartbroken, I'm sad, and depression. Depression, I mean, that could maybe trigger someone into a depression, and that's right. another conversation. But for me, what depression was, is there was no real reason that I could point to.
Right.
But I was... I lost interest in everything that I usually used to like. I became very antisocial. I didn't want to go out, and felt like numb. Like people would talk to me and it would just go in one ear and out the other. And I was giving the minimal effort to get out of every conversation.
You start to detach.
Yeah.
Yeah. And isolate.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's ironic, right? Because that's the absolute opposite of what you need at that given time, right? You need to connect. You need help. I'm glad that you're outspoken about mental health. I think. Of course, in the last decade, I guess, there's been a lot more talk about it, a lot more acceptance, but I still think there's still such a stigma. We were talking off camera about my wife's brothers in the military, you know, the military and, you know, depression or any kind of circumstance of the heart or the mind, it's off limits, right? A lot of people look at it as a weakness.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you touched on, I really believe that we do live in a world that it is highly stigmatized to be vulnerable and more so to actually, admit fault. Like yeah. We live in this social media world where everybody's sharing all these really picturesque moments and perfect things and everybody looks beautiful and there's filters to make yourself feel more beautiful and there's all these things and there's not enough of, hey, I'm hurting, and without people saying, oh, you're looking for attention. Because it's social media, again, everything feels like it's just attention-driven.
Right.
Where a lot of these things are real. Someone is hurting. Someone needs something. But instead of maybe saying it to their friend, they're saying it online, and then they're becoming, you know, people are making fun of them or thinking they're seeking attention or whatever. So it's really dangerous. But with that said, like, I feel like a great amount of responsibility to show my brokenness, because since I was young, I've hated how I looked. I hated a lot of parts of me. I dealt with a lot of self-hatred. And so because of that, I feel a responsibility to share my truth because of this platform I've been given. I'm on a stage in front of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people a year. So, you know, when we're touring So for me, it's like, I don't know. I feel like if I'm going to die at some point and I'm here for this allotted amount of time. So what I'm going to do with this amount of time, I just want to speak my truth.
Yeah.
I want to share my truth with people. And my truth is that life is really hard. I've dealt with a lot of depression and self-hatred. But I believe that therapy has saved my life. I believe that music has saved my life.
Yeah. And I think you have a choice, you know, when you have a platform, whether you have a small platform or you have a large platform like yours. And I think maybe even if I was going to extract a lesson, maybe to even the people who are watching thinking, you know, I'm 26 years old and I don't have a platform. But really, you know, it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality, right? If you could just reach one person with your words, if you could pick up the phone and call your friend and say, hey, we haven't talked for a while. Are you okay? How's it going? Even just that one person, right? Just reach out to that one can make all the difference. Let's switch gears to your music, your new album. Again, deeply personal. What are some of your favorite songs from it?
You know, it always takes an album being out for, I want to say a couple of years for me to really say, okay, that was a good song. That wasn't that good. Like I look back at albums now and our previous albums, and I feel like now I can finally be like, you know, Next to Me, I really loved that song off, you know, our last album, but I didn't think that at first, and Birds and, you know, different songs that have come up to me. But I don't have a concrete answer for you on what's my, you know, what I think is the good song on the record. I think time will tell.
Talk about Wrecked.
Wrecked is a really sad song on the record, that ended up being a single. I don't really have a whole lot of, I mean, I'll give my two cents to the label and stuff, what I think should be singles, but I kind of leave that to other people to decide. But what the song is about is about the passing of my sister-in-law, who I was really close to, her and my brother had 8 kids at the time, all under the age of, 14 at the time. So to give you an idea, a lot of young kids. She was in her 30s, totally healthy, perfect, Mormon woman, never had a drink of alcohol, never smoked a cigarette, like lived a perfect life as far as physically, and just cancer just came out of nowhere, took her life within a year. She was here and she wasn't here. And I happened to be playing a show in Houston, Texas, which was, they brought her to this specialist hospital to get specialist treatment. Nobody thought she was going to pass. And after the show, I went and stayed the night in the hospital with her and my brother, and she passed that night. Oh. And that was the first time I've been in the room with someone who was here and then not here. Like I said, I've lost a lot of friends throughout the years. I was never with them when they took their life or they passed away for whatever the different, overdose or whatever it was. Yeah. This was, I'm with you, I'm seeing life in you, and then I'm watching that life go, and then you're gone. And that, and also this was someone, this was family to me. This was like, we were very close. I'm like one of the most amazing people you'll ever meet. So it impacted me in a way that I still can't quite put into words. Like it has shaken me. It has made me like every day be like, how am I spending my time? Even with like, for instance, I really don't like doing interviews. If I'm being honest with you, I really don't like interviews. Sure. Typically when my brother sends me requests for interviews, I say no. This is something that's important to me. This is important to me because I think that this saves lives. I think that talking about these things are really important. Losing my sister-in-law has made me constantly question every single way that I'm spending my time. I only want to be spending my time doing things that I really care to do, that I want to be there. Like I have no time for kissing ass. I have no time for doing things because it will make someone else happy. Like I have kids that I owe enough to already.
Yeah. It makes it real.
So anyway, that song's about grief, dealing with grief and coming up short. I don't have a good answer for, I wish the song had some line that was like, but this will make it okay. Like there's really no line like that.
No, you're talking, it's giving me goosebumps because again, I think in some ways we're cut from similar cloth. I lost my dad about a year and a half ago. It was really super difficult. There's a whole iceberg under the water that you can't see, but he went in. He wasn't in the best of health, but he went in for kind of a corrective back surgery because he had back pain for a long time. And he was in San Francisco, and I flew out to see him, and he had done very well and, exceptionally well through the surgery that we were all just kind of like, yes, he was 68, 69 years old. And I remember saying goodbye to him in the hospital and getting back on a plane to come back to Los Angeles. And then when I landed, my sisters called me and said, Dad got an infection and he's gone. Just like that. And I had the same experience. Like suddenly, like nothing matters. Everything changes on a dime, and then you start thinking about your own mortality.
Yeah.
Am I taking good care of myself?
Right.
So I have 4 kids too,
right,
who count on me, but they're my everything. And, and it changes you, right? You start to prioritize things a little bit differently. You start to, you think about how short life is and what's really important and the mark that you want to leave and all that. So I appreciate that song. I appreciate you telling me the background behind that song. Another one is It's Okay to Not Be Okay.
Yeah.
To me, when I was listening to it, it's actually very like Beatles Yellow Submarine to me.
Yeah.
Kind of talk about the process of that one.
Yeah, that is currently one of my favorite songs on the record. And like I said, time will tell, maybe in 2 years I'll say I hate that song. But I wrote that in a bout of pretty serious depression, and I was often when I'm writing a song, I'm not ever thinking that I'm writing this for anyone else, because the majority of the songs I write, nobody ever hears.
Yeah,
and I know that. I painfully know that. I've written thousands of songs, thousands. I've written almost every day since I was 12. So you could do that math. Genuinely have written that many songs. So I know. So typically when I'm writing a song, I'm never thinking,
someone else is going to hear this. So I'm writing it for myself. Yeah. I'm a selfish writer. And
well, I produce the show the same way.
Yeah.
Okay. I do it for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And I hope that someone wants to know the same kind of answers.
Right. But if no one watched it, you'd still do it because you do it. Yeah. You need to explore this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was writing that song, I was really just saying to myself, Dan, it's okay to not be okay. Yeah. That's it. The song dives into people that I'm close to that are in my life. You know, the two verses are about different people and their different situations that went through. One alludes to toxic masculinity. One alludes to someone wanting to be who they are and love who they want to love. And it certainly has a Beatlesque value to it. And I really attribute that to Rick Rubin, because in its beginning stages, it really wasn't. And then we got into a studio and Rick was like, I really like this song, but it's pretty boring in the way that you put it together. Like, why don't you rethink it and go into a room? And he basically gave me a basket of instruments. And I went into a room and it was a basket full of like shakers and tambourines and a guitar. There was like acoustic guitar and just like a bunch of, you know, like nothing digitized. And then I started it like that. I worked on it for like 6 hours that day. And I remember walking out of this little, I would like to go into this little room, and I'd come out and show things to Rick and the band and thinking maybe they would just laugh at it or something. But it was certainly like, I was actually more thinking Take a Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed when I was writing it. Like that kind of like, it's like kind of just like mellow and a vibe.
Yeah.
But it feels happy, but the lyrical content is, you know, makes you think.
Yeah, it's deeply meaningful.
Yeah, so I showed it to him and everybody liked it. And so we just built on it from there.
Yeah. I was going to go back when you say, when we were talking about grief and one of my key learnings, one of the things that I've been trying to focus on, and I've learned this again from friends who've given me great advice, who've also gone through grief. I've learned about it from other therapists and professionals, that sitting with my feelings is actually okay. You know, my first reaction is to like avoid pain, and whenever it feels bad, feeling bad is bad at first. And, you know, so you try to either put it away, compartmentalize, or just numb it, forget about it, escape from it. But the advice that I've gotten to try and sit with my emotions has been so valuable. And the realization is that death, grief, trauma, I don't think that you ever get over it. I think it's something, again, this has been advice that you learn to dance with, that it's just in your life. You know, I think about my dad every single day. I think about my kids, my wife every single day, and how just much gratitude I have that I still have time with them. But, you know, those grief moments, or even some of the trauma that I had as a child, you know, I'm a full grown man. I'm still dancing with it, but
right.
I'm to a point now where I can again sit with it in a comfortable place and let it be, and then let it roll off and leave. It comes and it goes, and that feels okay, because, you know, going back to this idea of how do we get wisdom, how do we get experience, we got to feel the pain, right, to be able to, you know what to do next time, which the opposite is hiding. And, you know, cowardly, and you never accomplish anything, right? So if you want to live large or live a full, active life, you should expect to get your heart broken or trampled on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just part of the package, right, of being a human. This is the inevitable.
Yeah.
And it either happens early in life, midway through, or at the end, or all the above.
Right. There's something about the way that you walked into my living room, casually and confident, looking at the mess I am, and still you want me. All stress lines and cigarettes, politics and deficits, late bills and overages, screaming and hollering, and still you want me. Oh, always let you down. You shattered on the ground, but still I find you here next to me.
started from here. Here we go. Stress, something about the way that you always see the pretty view. You overlook the mud and mess. You're always looking effortless and steep. What I was good at the genius of the eight. All right, one more time, sorry. Okay, take one. There's something about the way that you walked into my living room, casually and confident, looking at the mess I am, and still you want me. All the stress lines and cigarettes, politics and deficits, late bills and overages, screaming and hollering. Still you want me. Oh, always let you down. You shattered on the ground, and still I find you here. I'm far from good, it's true, but still I find you.